This weekend starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Getting the upper hand on fear. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour. With mass shootings in the news, a psychologist offers ways to keep fear from controlling you. On the travel front, if a shortage of free lounge chairs is any indication, the cruise industry is staging a comeback. Plus, the bizarre find for an accountant in Anaheim, California, who was out walking her dogs, and questions to ask when a business says it will donate a portion of sales to charity.
Consumers are focused on trying to do good for others. They feel a little bit better. You know, we have things that we're seeing, you know, after the pandemic, of course, the war in the Ukraine. You know, there's all sorts of reasons why people feel like they would like to help out and help, maybe with a purchase.
Susan Tompor at the Detroit Free Press on the lack of disclosures by companies that tie themselves to a cause. Well, ridiculous is one way to describe summer vacation this year, as masses of travelers venture out only to discover things like labor shortages, high gas prices, airport chaos, flight cancellations, lost baggage mysteries, pricey hotels and vacation rentals, expensive airfare, extreme weather events, and a persistent pandemic. And there's worse news. Some aspects are not getting better anytime soon. Although July 4th weekend seemed to be mostly drama-free thanks to mostly cooperating weather. More now from Natalie Compton, travel reporter at The Washington Post. Natalie, what are you hearing?
It is exactly like what you were talking about. Even yesterday, I talked to a couple who went to Greece for their honeymoon. Their bags didn't make it with them. So every day, it seems like somebody has another anecdote of things going badly. As we speak right now, there are pilots picketing at airports across the country for Delta, saying they have schedule fatigue. So there's anger both on the customer side and the airline side. Travel's just a mess right now.
Wow. What do they mean by schedule fatigue? What's happening with that?
They are having issues saying that the airline hasn't updated their scheduling policies, leaving them incredibly overworked. They are feeling just the brunt of this stress right now, having to run all over the country, making up for the fact that there aren't enough pilots. So we'll see if these strikes help. They say that the strikes are not expected to impact any of the travel. They've coordinated this, so it's not going to disrupt travel, but they are trying to get more eyes on the issue that travel's in a bad place.
Jeez. All right, so, and as you point out, we just kind of talked about it there. I mean, it's passengers and pilots are unhappy, seemingly with lots of other groups.
Right. It's a stressful time to be working in travel. I mean, it's a stressful time to be traveling, and you're going to see that when you see the very tired barista at the airport or your flight attendant. So wherever you're going and however you're getting there, just remember to make eye contact, say thank you. It's not their fault.
Wow. We're speaking with Natalie Compton, travel reporter at The Washington Post. Her story is called Welcome to Summer Travel. It's Hell. I feel for the guy you opened your piece with, this guy Steve Miller, 25 years old, just trying to get to Nashville for some birthday party, something or other. Explain what he went through.
I got an email from Steve Miller about his airline experience where he's trying to get to Nashville for some birthday celebrations, and he starts getting hit with delay after delay. I'm talking like 2 hours, 5 hours. He's just having this nightmare scenario where he ended up driving there because he was going to miss all of the things he was traveling there for. So he had no choice but to spend money on a rental car, $100 in gas, get to Nashville anyway.
And he had to wait for that too, didn't he?
Yeah, it was just an example of what we're facing right now at every turn. So this poor guy, he sent me about 2,000 words on this nightmare scenario.
Holy cow. And so he decides to drive. Right now he's got to fork out money for the gas.
And boy, there was some other wrinkle in there too. I felt like I wasn't like he couldn't get a flight for like two more days or something, even though he got canceled. Right.
Right. The airline said we're canceling your flight, but we're not going to offer you another one for days. So it was just this example of sometimes you hope that when you are bumped from a flight or your flight gets canceled, a lot of the big airlines will have another option for you maybe later in the day or the next day or sometime that will still work for your schedule. But what people are running into right now are a lot of flights are full. There aren't as many planes as there were before. So airlines are having a tougher problem making up for disasters. So what people are saying for this 4th of July weekend is that they're expecting 2019 traveler numbers, but with less capacity. So that's less cars at the airport for rent and less planes to fly. So just expect some chaos if you're going into this yourself.
Well, you know, every time I talk to folks like yourself who live and breathe this, I feel like you're going to say, don't worry, in 3 weeks, it's all going to be cleaned up. And you haven't said that yet, Natalie. It's not getting better anytime soon.
We're not expecting any kind of miracle for summer. A lot of even politicians are pressuring the airlines to get their act together. I think it was Bernie Sanders who was calling for major fines to airlines if they can't get this together. So while we can't expect this to be solved overnight for a variety of reasons, we're still expecting traveler numbers to pick up for the rest of the summer. So this is absolutely something you will be hearing about for the months to come.
So if we roll the dice, basically, if we're desperate to travel and then cross our fingers and hold our breath. I mean, that's what it sounds like.
It's what it sounds like. Even people are talking about having delays on trains and running into issues. So it's not just airlines. You're going to be running into heavy traffic. AAA is saying that they're expecting a record number of drivers for this holiday weekend. So if you can, you could try driving on a Sunday or a Monday, which, you know, cuts into your holiday weekend, but you might not have such a horrible time on the road. So no matter what you're doing, you should just prepare for the unexpected because it's rough out there.
Thanks, Natalie. Natalie Compton, travel reporter at The Washington Post. Coming up next, avoiding the grips of fear. Dell's Black Friday in July sale is here. Power productivity with a tech refresh, now with up to 45% off top-rated laptops like the XPS, along with our special deals on business desktops with Intel Core processors. Get big savings on the latest servers, storage, monitors, and more with free shipping and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. With the latest mass shooting in Highland Park, Illinois, still fresh in our minds, many Americans are having trouble with yet another disaster, even if they're not directly tied to the heartache and devastation. How can they cope? Insight from psychologist and trauma therapist Dr. Catherine Athens, author of a book called The Heart Brain. Doctor, what are you telling clients?
You know, they come in, I talk to them, depending. There are many different therapies for trauma that work very well. But mostly I teach people to be present, to remember to start breathing. It sounds silly, but most of us don't breathe, or hardly at all, and to begin to feel their body on the earth present. When you're present, you cannot feel fear. You can't feel anything but joy. What happens is we have this idea of the future from what we've heard from the past, and then how am I going to live through that is what people tell me.
Almost seems like in some ways we copy and paste something terrible from the past and put it in our own future.
Perfect. That's such a good example.
Why do we do that?
Because that's how our brain works. That's how we've learned, you know, as little kids. You're always copying and pasting everything. You don't sit down and say, well, is this real? Is this reasonable? But as adults, we have that ability to say, stop. This is something that's not happening every day.
Yeah. You've read these same stories over and over that I have, or seen or heard these interviews with people who live in these towns where, say, there's been a mass shooting, and almost all of them say, we never thought it could happen here. So how do you say to someone to not worry about that when it is possible that it could happen where you are?
Well, anything is possible. I tell them, look, this is the Earth. It's not a perfect place. There's certainly more chance that you could die behind the wheel than from some crazy shooter who's very sick shooting you, first of all. So it can happen anywhere. People are disturbed right now, especially. The economy is not good. People are stressed. They're pushed. You know, with all this COVID, the COVID hangover that's going on, and they don't know what to do. And some people have gone out of their minds.
We're speaking with, just, yeah.
You know, that's it. And when someone is out of their mind, they'll do crazy things. And that's the human condition. It's not about where you live. It's about being human.
We're speaking with Dr. Catherine Athens, psychologist, also author of a book called The Heart Brain. We're talking about how to keep fear from controlling you. What's extreme worry? What happens? What are you doing when you experience extreme worry?
Well, you're generally in the past again, cutting and pasting and what we call perseverating, going over and over the terrible thing, the worst thing. One psychiatrist calls it catastrophizing, where you sit and you imagine the very worst thing happening. And then you're stuck. You cannot move. You cannot think because you're in the brain, in the amygdala of the brain. You're in the centers that will just go over and over something bad. So the way to get up is to get up and get out and go to the forest, go in the backyard, put your feet in the ground, breathe, get yourself water, sip water all day. Understand that at that moment you are safe.
Mm.
And it's really important to stay in the moment. Right now I am safe. Right now I am present. Right now I can function. What happens is the brain turns off and we have that flight or fight syndrome where all that blood goes to the muscles and the adrenaline goes up and the brain turns off. We have no real good reasoning ability.
That's Dr. Catherine Athens. Again, the book is called The Heart Brain. Coming up next, the most popular marketing tactic when it comes to beach reads. Hey, glad you're with us. Beach reads are all the rage this summer. June was the second biggest month for adult fiction sales for the past decade, and book sales overall soared during the pandemic. Now, as vacations begin in earnest, publishers are trying to hang on to those numbers. Book industry executives say novels with beachy covers are so popular that publishers put bare feet and glistening seas on practically any title. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
What is a beach read, and does it have anything to do with the beach? The story from Ellen Gammerman at the Wall Street Journal. Ellen, what's the traditional definition of a beach read?
A beach read is any engrossing page-turner that's marketed towards summertime sales, usually released in the spring or early summer, and doesn't necessarily have to be based at the beach, but it's just supposed to be a really easy to read, quick read, escapist book.
Are they targeted at women specifically?
They are. You know, a lot of the writers are women, and a lot of the images on the covers are women. And it is typically seen as a genre where, typically seen as a genre where women authors are prominent, although some women authors think it's a term used to belittle what they do because we say beach read and it just sounds frivolous.
How do publishers market beach reads?
Well, everything looks better on a beach and with a blue sky and an umbrella, and so even some of the more serious books that don't have all that much to do with the beach sometimes get one of those beachy covers. We were counting up how many times we saw bare feet and, you know, sun hats and things like that. And it's just a very, when you're, and whether you're buying it online or you're in a bookstore, it's just a very enticing kind of cover. And often the titles will be, will have some word like sunshine or surf or sand or ocean in them. So it's just all meant to appeal to that side of you that just wants to be on vacation.
We're speaking with Ellen Gammerman of the Wall Street Journal. Ellen, take us through some of the most popular authors of this genre, and are they purposefully writing this kind of book and marketing it this way?
Yeah, well, one of the first and most successful is Ellen Hildebrand, and every year she has a beach read that comes out, almost always has one of those sky blue covers, and she's always set them on Nantucket. That's kind of known as her territory. In fact, other writers pick different beaches and sort of vacation regions because they don't want to, they wouldn't dare try to do Nantucket, which Ellen Hildebrand has done so well for so many years. So she's a big one. Jennifer Weiner is, she's written a three-book Cape Cod series, and she's interesting because she has up until now sworn off beach reads and said that she just doesn't want to be associated with that because she thinks the term is sexist. But finally, she just said, if you can't beat them, join them, because she saw how successful these books were and she just wanted to, you know, to dive in. So she wrote three books, all settled on Cape Cod.
Do people actually read more in the summer and take books on vacation? Is there a surge of reading?
Yeah, surprisingly to me, June is the second highest month for book sales after Christmas time. So that does speak to all of the quick vacation buying that people are doing. Sometimes people who don't read a lot will buy that one book for their vacation. And publishers are trying to make that one book be, you know, a beach read or a book that will get them hooked and coming back. A lot of these beach read authors have long lists of previous novels in a similar vein. And so if you get into one, you could be reading 30 books before you know it.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Gammerman. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Coming up this half hour, the complaint that your colleagues cannot relate to. Also, where do-gooders need to take a step back. Plus, the cruise industry bounce back and a strange find by a woman walking her dogs. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, parents are returning to offices and need more childcare options than in recent summers. They're complaining about the soaring costs of camps and nannies, and kid-free colleagues are sick of it. More from Callum Borchers, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Cal, what are you hearing?
Well, what's different about this summer from the last couple, of course, is that office occupancy rates are at their highest level since before the pandemic, and young kids can get vaccinated. Remember, last summer, they still weren't eligible if they were under 12. And so those two things mean the world is a little bit more back to normal. Well, back to summer camp you go. Well, with inflation right now, some of these camps and other summer activities are costing, you know, 2 and 3 times what they did a couple of years ago. So it's big time sticker shock for these working parents who got a little bit of a break from that routine in the last couple of summers. But meanwhile, their child-free coworkers are sick of hearing about the complaining. They're sick of the struggle because they're the ones who feel like, hey, we get stuck picking up the slack whenever you have to dash out early to go to the pickup line, or you're using all your vacation time because you know, the kids are out of school. The work still has to get done, and we're expected to shoulder that load.
Yikes. All right, so as you point out in the story, there are daycare challenges. One, it's hard to find. Two, it's wildly expensive. Then you talked about day camp, for example, versus the cost of a nanny.
Yeah, I mean, day camp is it's no cheap ticket, but it may be a relative bargain compared to a nanny. Just some data points. I was speaking with a mother in Texas who said, look, I've got twin boys. We paid a couple $100 in the past for them to go to a day camp. Well, now it's $600 a week. You know, it's 3 times what we were accustomed to paying. I mean, that's practically a mortgage payment when you work it out over the course of a month. And so that's really huge. But $600 a week is still cheaper than the average of $715 a week for a nanny to watch two kids. And then you've got some couples who are shelling out for both because they work, you know, full-time jobs, both of them. Maybe they've got staggered hours and just the driving alone. You know, I spoke with a couple in Maryland that says, you know, their kids, their 3 kids require something like 5 hours of driving every day just to get them to all their various commitments. So they have a full-time nanny to shuttle the kids around, basically.
Speaking of nannies, you mentioned something I had not heard, and that is that there are these days, in some cases, bidding wars for nannies.
Yes, this same couple told me, you know, we've had cases where we think we fired a nanny, and then she says, hold on, I've got an offer from another family, and this other family is offering a little bit more, and now that you're into a bidding war for this nanny. I mean, colleagues at the Wall Street Journal have written about teenage babysitters who can command $30 an hour in certain markets in this country. I mean, the child care costs are through the roof. But meanwhile, again, the coworkers who don't have kids are like, listen, that's your responsibility. You decided to bring the kids into the world. That was your option. Stop complaining about it and stop expecting us to be the ones who pick up the slack for you.
Wow. We're speaking with Callum Borchers, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Working Parents Are Having a Rough Summer. Some coworkers don't want to hear about it. One thing they do agree on, you said in your piece, this always on culture. Explain that.
Yeah, basically, you know, despite a little bit of squabbling on both sides, I heard from both parents and non-parents who said we really shouldn't be divided among ourselves. Really, the root cause here is this expectation that we are always connected to work. And many folks told me that that has only gotten worse during the pandemic because, I mean, what did out of office mean the last couple of years? Well, everybody was out of the office, right, if they were working from home, but you were still connected on your laptop or on your smartphone. And so it became harder to unplug. And a lot of folks have described, you know, working longer hours in the last few years than they did beforehand. And so what I heard over and over from folks in both camps was if we all were just expected to do our regular, you know, 40 or so hours a week, well, nobody would be pointing fingers and saying, well, she's not picking up extra. Well, how come he's not, you know, chipping in his fair share? And so they say, well, companies really need to create saner work environments for everybody.
Yeah. Boy, finish up if you would. I know it was the main focus of your story, but it struck me that couple in Maryland you spoke to, where the husband was asked, I guess, a couple of times with regards to childcare, somebody would say to him, well, where's your wife? And I thought,
yeah,
oh,
that
boy,
was that, interesting, that's, right?
That's fighting words.
Yeah, good luck with that one. I mean, he's an attorney. He does private equity mergers and acquisitions. So it's a big time job, very demanding, no doubt. But at the same time, you know, his wife is a personal trainer who's building her own business. So she's got plenty on her plate as well. And they've got 3 kids between them. And he told me that's one of the other tensions in this dynamic right now, too. It's not just about can you find external help, but also within the household. How do you divide up the labor?
Thanks, Cal. Callum Borchers, columnist at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, when do-gooders need to take a step back. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. Anyone who shops at a retail store at a mall knows that it is tempting to round up that purchase at the register to give to a cause or donate to charity. But how do you know the cause is legit or that your money is actually getting there? Here's Susan Tompor, personal finance reporter at the Detroit Free Press. Susan set this up.
Consumers are focused on trying to do good for others. They feel a little bit better. You know, we have things that we're seeing, you know, after the pandemic, of course, the war in the Ukraine. You know, there's all sorts of reasons why people feel like they would like to help out and help, you know, maybe with a purchase. This, of course, dates back many years ago. You know, you had it with some of the Gap t-shirts and you know, the donated proceeds. And so there have been a lot of really big programs. I spotted an ad locally for a real estate agent that said they'd give 5% of their proceeds to a pet rescue of your choice. So that was in one of their ads as a way to kind of, you know, get you to pick them over another real estate agent. The question that the University of Michigan researchers and others have been raising, though, is there isn't a lot of regulation, and regulations by states can vary. And so sometimes you have no idea what you're really going to be supporting. You know, they may not even name the charity. They might not tell you exactly how much they're going to donate.
Wow.
They'll say maybe a portion of the profits, but you don't really know what the profits will be on that t-shirt.
Is it in the fine print somewhere, Susan?
There really isn't. I don't think they're being asked to disclose very much. You know, you can go online and look at, you know, what some promotions have. But unfortunately, this regulation is somewhat somewhat sketchy, you know, that you're really not. And then who's going to monitor it anyway, even when the states are regulating it? You know, somebody's got to go out and actually police this stuff. So it is sort of, you know, buyer beware, if you will. If you like the shirt and you think it's a good price and you're, you know, thinking that some money might go to the organization, you know, that may be a way to look at things. But to think that you're, you know, really helping someone, it kind of is, you know, you may be or you might not be. It just depends on how much the company is donating.
Wow.
You know, I talked to Carhartt. They've got, you know, and they're people are doing all sorts of things. Carhartt, a popular company here, Dearborn based, they've got a promotion that's coming on in August where they're sponsoring a company or supporting a company called Skills USA, which, you know, helps build skills in the, you know, industry and trades industry. And so they're coming out with a Support the Trades t-shirt. What they do tell you is last year the groups donated about $100,000. Once their target sales were numbers were hit, and this year it's $150,000 is their target. But they don't really tell you what percentage of that shirt's going to go. They do tell you what the top line number is. Some don't even tell you that. So you do, you know, you can ask questions at the register. You can, of course, you know, maybe look things up. In Michigan, it was sort of interesting that we don't really have much protection under what they call this cause marketing. But there are some issues that can be raised under a consumer protection lens. So if you're working for a company where you know that they're not making these donations, you know, say it's a restaurant and you absolutely know that there's no way they're contributing to anything, you might be able to file a complaint with your state attorney general's office.
Wow.
You know, because that's some deception.
Thanks, Susan. Susan Tompor, personal finance reporter at the Detroit Free Press. Coming up next, the rebound of the cruise industry. Dell's Black Friday in July sale is here. Power productivity with a tech refresh, now with up to 45% off top-rated laptops like the XPS, along with our special deals on business desktops with Intel Core processors. Get big savings on the latest servers, storage, monitors, and more with free shipping and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Hey, thanks for spending some time with us. So where does the cruise industry stand after ramping up operations for months on end while facing changing protocols and cases on board? Nathan Diller, consumer travel reporter at USA Today, says lines are back, there are fewer free lounge chairs on the decks, and the wait for a cocktail at the bar is a little longer. Nathan, explain the trend.
What we're really seeing is bookings are up across cruise lines. Many of them, you know, we're seeing higher demand this summer. You know, we're sort of more than 2 years after the pandemic really shut everything down, and things have been kind of ramping up since last summer. And so some of them, you know, have told us in the course of reporting this story that they've seen record booking weeks and months. They're seeing, you know, families really interested in traveling together, multi-generational travel groups. And then they're also ramping their fleets back up. So they're getting more and more ships back into service. And we heard from Cruise Lines International Association, which is the industry's leading trade group, that nearly 100% of its ocean-going cruise line fleet will be back in service by midsummer. So more and more ships.
So are the ships full, like airplanes? I know it's kind of an apples to orange comparison, but are ships full or there's still capacity limits from, I don't know, leftover COVID rules?
You know, we've heard from travelers who've been on ships recently that they have seen, you know, it has felt quiet, that it hasn't felt totally full. So I think, you know, things have been sort of slowly getting back to normal. It's not quite there. But I know that from the cruise lines, we've heard, you know, again and again that things are trending in a sort of positive direction. So you might have seen some quieter ships beforehand, but I don't think that will be the case for long.
We're speaking with Nathan Diller, consumer travel reporter at USA Today. They've got a piece running called "Is the Cruise Industry Coming Back?" And he says the answer is yes. Are there still COVID rules? I'm not a cruiser, so I'm not that closely tied to it.
Yes. Yeah, there are. You know, the CDC has its COVID-19 program for cruise ships, and the majority of the major cruise lines are opted into that. So it sets out some guidance for cruise lines, which include testing and vaccination requirements. And experts really credit those for getting the industry back on its feet and helping travelers to cruise safely. So, you know, there's no public date as of now for when the testing requirement might drop. We've seen some cruise lines doing that for voyages outside the country. But that is something that, you know, people have their eye on.
Yeah. Boy, what if these days you get COVID on a cruise, then what?
There's a protocol in place. Most cruise lines, you know, we've heard from passengers who did get COVID recently on cruises and, you know, they were isolated and many passengers really feel very safe and have had great experiences. But in other cases, there have been passengers like the ones that we talked to who've had, some less than great experiences with COVID. A few passengers told us that they felt like the cruise lines were not totally prepared to handle the situation.
That's Nathan Diller, consumer travel reporter at USA Today. Coming up next, an Olympic lost and found effort. How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save. We'll finish with this. How about this for a discovery? Maria Carrillo stepped outside the back door of her office to walk her two dogs one evening when she noticed a plastic fast food bag had been dumped on her property. When she picked up the McDonald's bag, the 50-year-old, who lives and works in Anaheim, California, said it felt heavy, and she thought there might be a rock inside. The Washington Post says she opened it and saw an object gleaming in the middle of the crinkled hamburger wrappers and empty French fry boxes. It looked exactly like an Olympic gold medal. Turns out it was. Police checked their files and told her that the gold medal belonged to Jordan Poulter, the starting setter of the 2020 U.S. women's volleyball team. On May 25th, she had reported it stolen from her car while it was parked in her garage in Anaheim. She actually won the medal last summer in 2021 because of the pandemic. Poulter said she had mistakenly left it there one day after she had been carrying it around with her to show it to her friends. By the way, she said she plans to give Ms. Carrillo a $1,000 reward for returning it. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.